A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, three tremendous nerds, strong in the geek side of the Force, came together to face their greatest challenge yet, the behemoth known as the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
Now witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational battle station.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets illusions of grandeur.
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
Sir, it's quite possible this asteroid is not entirely stable.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I have a bad feeling about this.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Darth Vader noise.
Welcome to Thrawn and On and On,
a Star Wars literary podcast.
I'm Sean.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Alex. I'm also dying, so be gentle with me.
No dying!
No dying. Yeah, I mean, it's no better than some of the characters that are in this book we're about to talk about.
Oh, so. No.
No, poor characters dying. Aw. So we are here to talk about the Expanded Universe, specifically the current Disney canon, sometimes referred to by certain fans as the Canon of Destroyed Dreams, by others as just the Disney canon.
Only by you.
Also known as Legends, right? I mean, that's like...
Well, that's the other one. We're not in that one now. We're in the sexy other one.
Anyway, Bloodline by Claudia Gray.
Yes. I don't want to hear any of this whiny legend shit out of anyone, or I will beat you to death with a copy of Phasma.
Oh my gosh, they destroyed the legends, Alex. Like, they ruined my childhood by taking my stories away.
They stole all of my old books and set fire to them and told me that I couldn't like Star Wars anymore.
They're still in my Kindle. They can cab them across my dead body.
Oh, that's so sad.
Very sad.
I'm not. I am defiant. I have them all forever, even though I haven't read them because I'm keeping myself pure for this podcast.
What a good person.
Well, that's good, because it's important to stay... I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter. You could go about this any way you want. I'm just a nerd. But part of the reason we decided to do this is, I think when we were doing the show a long, long time ago, we had decided that it might be fun to jump back and forth, because we were doing the Thrawn trilogy, which is where this podcast gets its name, because Thrawn is a sexy man. And now we've decided to kind of switch things over.
Oh, God. And he only gets sexier in the new Timothy Zahn books. It's really just, like, unfair.
I know. He is hot. Ooh. He is really hot.
So gay. So gay!
Is he super gay?
Okay, well, in my opinion, he is. But that's, like, its whole other podcast. Anyway, I will show you all of my feelings.
So at some point, we will read those books. But for now, we're here to talk about Claudia Gray's Bloodline. In the years immediately preceding Force Awakens, or a few years before. So to get there, we need to kind of describe what this book is about, which has been my job, I think. So effectively, this takes place roughly 25 years after the Battle of Endor. It is in a period when the New Republic has come back up, and you have everybody kind of arguing and bickering about what to do. And we're sort of at this really rough, weird stalemate where you have a group called the Centrists who want a more concentrated power in the Senate. And then you have the populace who want to sort of essentially states' rights. They just kind of want to go the opposite direction. And it has resulted in these two sides basically being unable to come to any kind of conclusion. We have Leia, who has aged a little bit, and she has been fighting this battle effectively her entire life. And then fairly early on in the book, she decides, you know, I don't know if I can keep doing this anymore. And then weird shit happens. And that weird shit is they start to realize that there may be something going on that is more than just criminal elements. Causing trouble, which is a normal thing in a galaxy, that there may actually be some deeper conspiracy at work. Leia goes on a journey with a senator by the name of Ransom Casterfo, who is dashing and handsome and wishes he was as good at Thrawn, but he's not. Sorry.
And he collects Nazi memorabilia. Let's not forget that part, because that is very important to his character.
Empire fanboy, Ransom Kisterfo.
Yeah.
Spoilers, maybe we should, like, hold off the spoilers.
Okay, I'm sorry. Jeez. Okay. That's, like, you find that out early on, anyway.
Well, yeah, fair enough. But anyway, so the whole premise of the book is really kind of about political intrigue and uncovering some things that, you know, occur in The Force Awakens, but aren't necessarily explained in The Force Awakens. So it gives us some sense of, like, how the First Order begins to arise, some of the reasons for why there is the resistance and why Leia leads the resistance. We don't get the full story, we get parts of that story, and we get some pretty big reveals for the characters of the universe, not necessarily for us, because we know some of the secrets that end up being revealed.
Yes.
It's fundamentally a Leia book. Some of the other casts do come up either as mentions or, in the case of Han Solo, does appear here. But this is very much the Leia book. And if you are a Leia fan and you need more badass Leia shit, this is the book to read. And if you don't want those things, I don't know why you're a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, hard agree.
So I think I got it pretty okay. Is there anything unspoiler that I probably missed?
I mean, you know, we could also mention, like, what the secret is, because it has to do with the title. But if you consider that a spoiler, we can just not mention it until after we hit the spoiler wall.
Well, it's not really a spoiler for anybody except for the characters in that universe. You know, we've known it since the original trilogy.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how it's revealed is a spoiler. But we should note that the story reveals to the universe that Leia is the son of Darth Vader. It's something we've known.
The daughter! The daughter!
Daughter. What did I say?
Son.
I meant son, S-U-N, right? You know, metaphorical. Oh, sure. No, I fucked that up. God, totally,
yeah,
fucked it up.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a big part of the plot of the novel, is it being revealed and how various people react to it. Including Leia.
Right, yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong on this. I've only read the Thrawn books so far, the original Thrawn trilogy, because okay, I am keeping myself unsullied. But the Leia in the Legends books has not kept her ancestry a secret, has she? So that seems to be a fundamental difference right there, is in this universe, she never told anybody. And then the other universe she did? Is that fair?
Yeah, the thing that wasn't clear to me, because I will admit that I don't spend all of my life on Wikipedia, so there is a bit that I don't know. My understanding with the classic Legends universe is that it's not that people don't know, it's that those that don't know don't need to ask, and those that do know is just sort of like, it's information. It's like the universe doesn't care that much about that detail.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just they didn't think about that, it might be a concern, or if they just never thought, like, maybe we should address it.
Because, I mean, I thought, like, for in Bloodline, that was such a huge part of it, and I felt like, in a way, it was handled better than they ever did it in Legends, because when you think about it, if they're like, oh, hey, this lady is the daughter of Darth Vader, that's like somebody being like, oh, hey, your dad was Hitler.
Right.
Yeah.
If Hitler and Eva Braun had a kid and she moved to America and ran for president, how would we feel about that?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Like, I feel like that's a pretty reasonable parallel for, you know, it makes sense that people react the way they do because Darth Vader was a bad guy.
He was a fairly not nice man. So before we kind of get into some of the maybe more spoilery territory, we should briefly talk about our reactions to this book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some of which I think we've already kind of given, and I'm not going to go first in this round because I have already talked quite a lot. So I'm actually going to throw it to Alex first. Give us your general reactions to this book. Remember, try not to give too much away because we'll get to spoilers.
Oh, no, I'm going to be very general. I'm going to say that I seem to remember, and it was so long ago, because, I mean, last year was approximately, like, 12 years long.
At least.
I'm pretty sure that I was the one who insisted that we read this book and that we get some of the new Star Wars books in here. And, I mean, frankly, like, I really, really liked this book. Claudia Gray writes well. She's very readable. She's not, like, too flowery. She you can tell that she really gets Leia as a character. And gets what makes her strong, and it's not, you know, running around with a blaster when she's 8 months pregnant. Sorry, Timothy Zahn, but I will never forgive you for that. But, like, I really liked this book, and I felt like it was a really good setup for The Force Awakens, other than I really fucking hate the ending, which we can talk about after the spoiler wall, but...
You and I might agree.
my hatred for the way they ended the book, and it's a very, like, specific thing, does not really stop how much I enjoy the rest of it, and I still think it's a really good Leia book, so I like it.
I think that's fair. All right, Kate, why don't we jump to you, get your general reactions. What do you think about the book?
Oh, man, I absolutely adored it. It hit me right in the feels. I'm basically the same age as Leia in this book. You know, she's in her late 40s, so am I. And in one of my prior incarnations, I was a public elected official. I've been a woman in politics, and that was when I was in my early 30s. And it was nightmarish. And so that, people would expect me to hate that, but I actually love the way this was portrayed because it is a different universe. And the crap that Leia had to deal with had nothing to do with the fact that she was a woman. And so I really enjoyed that a lot because the thing that I ran into at every turn in my political career was not only that I was a woman, but I was a woman without a husband to keep me in line. And that got really ugly sometimes. So I really, it was kind of a wish fulfillment for me seeing Leia in the Senate and then also seeing her go off and be her badass self and all the other ways she's done it. So I thought this was really glorious. And I have to say, I listened to the audiobook and it's narrated by January Lavoie. And she is, this is my first time listening to one of hers, tremendous, absolutely tremendous. Even when she was voicing Ransom Costerfo, she got that quasi-imperial Peter Cushing accent just right. And yeah, all of the other characters, she just, it was wonderful. So that really added to the experience for me. But I really just thought this was a remarkable, insightful, well-thought book. There were no, apart from, you know, the instantaneous communication across the galaxy and distance doesn't exist kind of space travel. Apart from that, incredibly plausible in the way people behave and situations evolve. And I thought it was fantastic. It was good sci-fi, not just good Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was like good political sci-fi, which
yes,
is harder to do than most people seem to believe.
Well, it is kind of hard, especially like in a Star Wars book. How do you make like a bunch of people arguing in the Senate actually interesting? Which I think this book mostly succeeds at.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So my reactions, I think I'm going to be the one that's not as much a fan. And I don't think it's necessarily specifically the book's fault as it is a universe's fault. And it goes to something I think that I don't know if exactly Alex and I are thinking about the same exact thing, but for me, my biggest problem I think I had with the book wasn't the portrayal of Leia, which I think when I first read it, I really had issues with. And then when I listened to it a second time, I kind of came off like, yeah, actually, I agree with Alex's take. This is a pretty solid Leia book. Like, I think Claudia Gray gets Leia, like the perception of Leia, especially a Leia 25 years after the last time we technically saw her, got that pretty well. My biggest concern for me is, and I think this is getting to where I'm having the most troubles with the new universe, is it felt too cynical, which I know is a weird thing to say about a book that's preceding war, but it really was difficult for me to not sort of feel depressed reading this book. And I don't know, maybe it's just silly of me to sort of want my Star Wars books to always feel hopeful. And I know that the book tries to, at various points, give us that sense of hope. But I just kind of felt like by the time I got to the end of it, everything, there wasn't any hope. Like, it was all kind of pointless. And that really, like, kind of irked me a little bit. I kind of felt sort of like I don't know. I just felt like something had sort of been taken away that I really wanted. And I don't know if it's just like it's my weird geek side can't quite accept the new universe fully yet or what it is, but I don't know. So I don't hate the book. I'm not going to be one of those people who's like, it's a new universe, burn it all to the ground, and like, screw Disney, and like, slay the mouse, and guillotine him, right? I won't go that far, because I think that's insane. That's just absurd, right? There's no reason for you to take that kind of perspective. It's just ridiculous. But I do think that I kind of understand to some degree where some of my trepidation about the new direction is. And I hope that other books that are in this universe bring some of that, just that pure sort of archetypal hope that is kind of Star Warsy. I really want more of that. I want to feel like when I get to the end of this character arc, there is something that like positive that's going to come out of it. And maybe I'm just, you know, don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know. That's just kind of how I came out of it.
No, I think you've got something there, Sean, because I noticed when I listened to it again for this, after having first read it back in 2016, before time and space and ontology were broken, it was a more depressing read this time in the political reality that we're surrounded by now.
Yeah. No shit.
And the only reason it didn't feel as bleak to me is probably because right before I started this again, I had reread The Sheep Look Up. Are you guys, either of you, familiar with that?
No.
No.
John Brunner. It's from 1972, and it's the ultimate dystopian America. Imagine America if, like, Rachel Carson had never written Silent Spring, and they'd kept on using chemicals and pollutants at that level, and the Environmental Protection Agency was never invented, and imagine what America would be like then. So everybody's got multiple drug-resistant diseases. You can't go outside without a filter mask. The water is unfit to drink no matter what. And it is one of the bleakest books ever written. It's also incredible. It's just really brilliantly written. And it was held up at the time, especially in like the early 90s and stuff, especially it was referred to as a self-denying prophecy, because it was kind of a, well, this is what America could have been if we hadn't smartened up in the 70s. But then reading it again this time, it's like, oh no, we're trying for that after all. And I highly recommend the book because it's genius. But it's quite, I would say it's even more depressing than The Road. So coming off that, Bloodline was not so cynical and depressing for me. But I could see where, if I hadn't been coming off that, it might have been.
I also think that, and I will say, okay, like the first Thrawn novel that I will rant forever about how gay it is, honestly has kind of a weirdly hopeful thing. So I don't think it's just like, oh, this is endemic to the new universe. I mean, I think that because this is supposed to be the novel that explains how the New Republic falls apart and the First Order rises, it was always going to have a bit of a downer ending, because it's like, hey, you know that stuff we fought for in the original trilogy? It didn't turn out so great. Now the fascists are back. Whoops!
I guess, yeah, and I mean, you're right. There, to some degree, like, maybe I should not have expected something different.
Well, I will say, you know how it could have not been as fucking depressing? Can we put up the spoiler wall so I can have at it?
Spoiler wall right now, yes.
It's a trap! Take evasive action!
If they hadn't just fucking been like, oh, okay, oh, so sorry, Ransom has to go get executed and Leia can't do anything fucking about it. That would have fixed it.
Right. I thought he was such an interesting character.
Right?
And I was like, why hasn't he been in The Force Awakens? Is he just skulking around somewhere to turn up in the third movie or what?
He could be like a spy or something. But no, they were like, oh no, he just...
Oh, he could do all sorts of things.
Like, he has to go back to his home to get executed for, like, reasons. And Leia's like, well, that's sad. I'll go, like, rally the troops and not do anything to help you, buddy. And that was the one, like, everywhere else in this fucking book, I was like, yes, Claudia Gray gets Leia, everything makes sense. And then that, where Leia's just kind of like, well, it's a shame that this guy who I've now emotionally connected with, and we understand each other and we have the same goals, he's gonna go get executed because of a bunch of bullshit. Well, that sucks. Laters.
Right?
What?
Why isn't she cooking up a stupid disguise and going in to fucking rescue him like she did her husband?
Right. It is the moment in the book that I feel is the least Leia moment.
Oh my god, yes. We are in perfect agreement.
And I wonder if the company didn't force that on her because, well, we don't have room for this character in where we're going with this, so you have to kill him off.
Which, I mean, is such bullshit, because then it could just be like, yeah, he's off doing something else and we'll write another book about him or whatever.
Right.
Or he shows up in the third movie.
Right.
Like, it's a golden opportunity. He's a cool character.
I mean, like, I felt like, you know, for all that the book was about the New Republic falling apart and Leia basically being the lone person trying to stand against all of these political machinations and just not being able to do it and having to go into retreat, like, what would have kept that from being like a complete fucking downer is if at the end she was like, but I'm gonna rescue Ransom because at least, you know, because one person is still important. And that the failure to do that is honestly what made the book, made it have a bad ending.
Yeah, I have to absolutely agree there.
Yeah.
Oh, Claudia, someday tell us what happened.
Whew, God, that made me mad enough that I'm actually like a little dizzy.
Well, if you want to get really super depressed, you know what happens to Kor?
Do I want to?
She's in The Force Awakens.
Is she the one that's played by Carrie Fisher's daughter?
Nope.
Okay.
That would have been nice, but nope.
Oh, no.
Nope. Kor Sella is the figure that we focus on right as Hosnian Prime is being destroyed by Starkiller Base. She is the person of color. I can't recall the actress's name off the top of my head. So we actually witness her death.
Son of a bitch.
Sorry, I brought the mood down even more. So.
No, that's okay. Because, I mean, I really do feel like it's a glaring flaw in an otherwise really good book. And especially, like, Ransom, I mean, I fucking started out hating him because he was, like, a little baby fascist with his Nazi memorabilia collection. And then it's like, well, it's a little more complicated than that. And also, he pulls his head out of his ass after hanging out with Leia long enough.
He does mostly. I will say my biggest criticism for him is there was a moment when I wanted to punch him in the face, but it was not the moment which has been alluded to, which we should probably explain, which is the moment when we realize he's been collecting Imperial memorabilia and he sort of, at least initially, suggests that he sort of reveres the Empire. Yeah. And Leia rightly is like, duh, sorry, what is this fucking bullshit that just came out your mouth?
Like, what the actual fuck? Yeah.
And so I think that's a great setup. It's a really good sequence of the book, because then we actually get to see later on where we get the opposite of, like, actual people who are like, oh, the Empire was actually kind of a good thing. I wish we could go back to that. He doesn't actually want to go back to the Empire. He wants to go back to strong government, but run by not fucking evil people.
Yeah.
Which, while I disagree with his interpretation, at least when we see that sequence kind of flow out, right, from I'm collecting these things to his conflicts with Leia to we're actually technically on the same side, we just think differently about the methods, and I don't collect these things because I actually love the Empire, I'm just like I'm a weird collector dude and maybe I shouldn't have it in my office, but whatever, to later on when he is talking to the other centrists, and that's the moment when I wanted to punch him, because here he is given the most obvious moment in the book when you should know your colleagues are most definitely involved in some shit. Because some of those people flat out tell him, like, man, if we need to go back to the Empire, we need to go back to those days, if only Palpatine hadn't fucked it up for us, we would still be in power. And that was the moment when I thought, you need to realize that you're on the wrong side. And while I don't think you need to necessarily go full Leia here, your position has got to change.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I do remember that moment in the book where I was like, waiting for him to be like, all right, now, dude, you need to go tell Leia that there's some problems.
You would think that's what he would do. I love his character because I think he's such a nuanced character, but I feel like his naivete is, like, really frustrating at times, which is another reason why I think I kind of wish his character didn't just die, because it gives me that sense of hopelessness of, like, if there was nothing we could have done for this guy, even though effectively he is a good guy.
Yeah.
But his naivete is, like, it's super frustrating because the second Lady Carice shows up and is like, oh, by the way, I found this stuff and here you go. And like, it's Leia's big secret. I don't know what you'll do with it. Whoopsie doopsie. And then she leaves. Right? And my reaction to that
is to totally be like, what she sounds like on the audiobook too, Alex.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
She does sound a lot like that.
Oh my God.
And my reaction at that moment was, I know you're hearing this and you're having all these emotional reactions, but you're also old enough now that I would expect that you would see the ruse being planted, because Lady Cerise or Carice, or however, I can't remember how you say her name, in the book never really gets the moment in the book where I believe that she's as cunning as she thinks she is in the moments when we're in her head. But Castorfo, we do get enough of him to know he is actually a lot smarter than perhaps people are giving him credit for. And I don't know why he didn't figure out that this was a ruse, like, right away.
Yeah, I mean, all I could get was, okay, maybe he just hates Vader that much.
That's what I thought, too.
But at the same time, I mean, it's so obvious that it's like, oh, he's starting to build a coalition with Leia, so somebody's just trying to drop a bomb into the middle of it. Gosh, I wonder what that's about. But I do suppose, you know, maybe it could have been a little more developed as sort of like a... Because that would actually ought to be a really interesting character interior thing, would be like, I know I'm getting played, versus this hatred I have is so fundamental to who I am because of what he did to me.
And it seems conflicting, right? Because he has this hatred of Vader, but he still does all of this, I'm collecting memorabilia, and it just doesn't... I don't feel the book quite explains how that those two things are not in conflict.
Well, that's what made him the most complete character in the book, I think. People, real people, don't always make that much sense. You know, we all have the neighbor that we can 95% of the time have a lovely conversation with, and then every, you know, 100th time they tell you something awful about how badly we need the wall, or how bad the gays are, or how great it is that X happened, and you realize it's actually a horrible person, and you've known this person all this time, and nothing, everything about them makes sense except for that. And people are like that. Everyone's got some stupid little disconnect in their heads. And so that made him feel even more believable to me than Leia in a Leia book. He's incredibly flawed, but that made him incredibly human and incredibly believable to me. Like, his political philosophy is still being formed, you know? And one thing that I thought, especially in the scene where he has all the other centrist party members in his office admiring his collection, did he adopt this originally as a kind of fitting in camouflage kind of thing? That he later just actually got into the collecting mania?
And I mean, if he hadn't gotten stupidly killed, it honestly could have been a cool thing where it eventually becomes like, I will keep this shit in my office because the way people react to it tells me a lot about
them. Right!
Which could be interesting if that, like, my impression was that he honestly was, like, collecting it out of a sort of sense of history, and he did seem to love not the Empire under Palpatine. He loved the other factors of Empire, and we understand it in the book because we see, like, literally scenes in the book where it's gridlocked. Nothing can be done. Nobody's doing anything, right? And it's more gridlocked than, like, what we're seeing right now, even though this book is obviously a parallel of the nightmare reality we've effectively been living for the last 4 years. Because right, we see the Senate is like, we're going to go do some stuff. We got to take care of this. And, like, nobody can do anything. It's totally gridlocked. And so we see that being set up against that sort of reality. So I think it's a fairly honest portrayal for him of what we're being shown, that he really is collecting because he actually values the ability to action that the Empire had. He disagrees with the interpretation of events that they would do, right, where they would, you know, let, like, our response to this problem is let's blow it up. But he seems to like that, the action, the ability to action, which is, I understand completely. And it is something that actually Leia values too. She just doesn't associate it with the Empire. And the very notion of suggesting as much, which he does essentially tell her, like pisses her off for reasons that he actually understands, but it, like both of them in the heat of the moment will just say shit to each other that they probably shouldn't say.
Well, and then another reason for the collecting might be because he grew up in the circumstances he did, basically starving to death, getting kicked aside, watching Vader bully his parents. In material poverty, on the edge of starvation, people who start out that way sometimes develop a very refined sense of aesthetics when they achieve agency and economic power and are able to choose. And they're the ones that become the really tidy, the really snazzy dressers. And who was it that said that fascism is basically applied aesthetics? Something like that. And like the sharp lines. And I remember at one point, Castorfo's looking at the Republic soldiers and how shabby they look versus, you know, how put together and awesome the stormtroopers looked and the Imperial Guard. And it's all very clean lines and vivid color. And, you know, so
it looks like authority.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost a thing where what's weird is that when you think about this book in the context of the film canon, like before the Empire, we have the Republic, right? And that Republic has uniforms and people have, like, there's standards of dress. And so there's a sort of aesthetic component to it that is about the sort of the power dynamic, right? The people have different types of uniforms depending about the type of thing that they do.
And the functioning economy.
Right, in a functioning economy, fair point, right? And then we get to the Rebellion, and then what you have is, yeah, we have the same dynamics of power, but it's the Empire. And so all of the symbology of the Empire is, this is the thing that's going to kill you. It's going to murder all of your family. It's destructive. It's hatred, as in the case of Vader, right? All of that kind of stuff. But that's contrasted against the Rebellion, who are dirty. They have uniforms, but they're sort of very functional versus sort of symbolic or aesthetic, right? And it seems like this new Republic has decided, well, we don't need to necessarily go away from what the Rebellion had, so let's kind of still go for that sort of drab functional, not realizing, like, but there may actually be some value to having a visual aesthetic of, like, what your power structure looks like, even if what we're not doing the full, like, let's go dark helmets and then weird dudes wearing plastic buckets on their head. Like, we don't need that. But we can do something else that kind of gives a sense of legitimacy. Because there is a thing that I think Ransom Castorfo is getting at, and what all of the other centrists effectively are getting at for slightly different reasons, is that there is a way of, like, having aesthetics be part of the path to legitimacy for your system of government, right? It grants legitimacy because of the way people look upon it. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily the way it should be, but that seems to be the implication in Star Wars.
I mean, the other kind of conflict you see, and this is one where Ransom is really like, you know, I know I have spoken with people who have similar opinions about, like, well, you know, fascism is bad, but if we actually just had a dictator who was a good person, then we could get things done. Where there's so much, like, so much in Star Wars is kind of about, like, this very simplified view of, you know, the authoritarian fascist state that is bad but can do things versus the democratic consensus building state that is always in a state of weakening paralysis that allows the authoritarian fascists to take over. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, this was what had to happen in this novel because it is the lead up to the New Republic falling apart. But the few times where you get to see Leia trying to be kind of a consensus builder, you know, it still feels very ineffective, which does get frustrating because it's like, well, there has to be a way to make this work. But it also, like, it's something that, you know, we see in our current democracy where we're just like, global warming is a problem and big changes need to happen. And most of us can't envision actually making it happen because it's such, you know, there's so much fucking gridlock. But at the same time, you know, being like, oh, well, you know, maybe let's go authoritarian just for this is also a bad idea.
I mean, it is very much like period Star Wars. It's like, it's very much about the now.
Yeah. Yeah. and I feel like Ransom is kind of showing that almost like naive viewpoint of, like, Nazis are bad, but what if we had good fascists who had the best interest of people at heart?
Yeah, and this is one of those things where I kind of wish that he hadn't died, because I feel like his position would change. Well, we assume he's dead because we don't actually see his death in the book, but effectively the dude's dead. He's either in a prison somewhere waiting to die or he's already dead. I don't know which one, but I kind of wish he hadn't, because I would have liked to have seen how his perspective of things would have changed, given how he had very clear evidence like that level of power breeds unimaginable levels of corruption. And I don't know if he would ever have gone to the point of, like, being like Leia, but I've, like, having him as, like, a foil to her in a way, where, you know, they'd have this resistance power structure where they don't necessarily agree, but, like, that's part of why the resistance and the rebellion worked, is it's not that they all agreed, it's that they realized some things were necessary to do, and that we didn't always have to use the same tactics every time to do the things. Like, I remember watching or reading an article about, like, part of the reason why the rebellion is so effective is that there's sort of a chaos to the way that they operate, and that it's very difficult for rigid systems like the Empire to sort of adapt, because they have, like, a specific way of, like, we go into a conflict and we deal with it in XYZ, but I don't know how to deal with Q. And it seems like, but that's kind of the point of the future that they could have together, is, like, one where there is that degree of chaos, which is really creative chaos of, like, people arguing over positions and then coming to different conclusions and different possible ways of doing things, which seems good for Leia, right? She's an older woman in this book, for God's sake. Like, she can't just keep doing the same stuff she did when she was, you know, a 16-year-old princess, right? There are limits even she knows she has physically, like, that she can only do so much. Like, she's not going to be doing flips off the wall.
Yeah, well, and she'd like to just retire and maybe get laid once in a while.
Well, and I think she also is kind of seeing where she's talking about leaving the Senate is Leia gets leaned on so much as a leader, where when you're in that situation for consensus building, where she is actually really good at that, and she has, it's kind of like if she left, everything would fall apart because there wouldn't be anyone there to make everyone come together. And I mean, you know, she has that role in the resistance as well, where she's leading them and she's got all the factions working together and everything, where it weirdly almost becomes like this cult of personality. Where you're just like, if Leia left, how the fuck would anything get done?
Yeah, well, she was the grown-up in the room. And in Casterfo, she maybe had the potentially found the next grown-up in the room that she could train yes. up. And, you know, leave the Senate in good hands in a year or two. But instead, you know, the paramilitary, criminal, centrist, Amalfi.
A Maxine warriors.
Maxine, yeah. Had to interfere and speed up her timetable and fuck everything up. Which is, you know, what your antagonist should do. Because otherwise you don't have a story.
This is very true, but I'm still just angry that they killed off Ransom.
Oh, absolutely.
Forever. Forever.
Till the end of time.
Yeah. So we should, maybe we need to switch over to talking about some of the other things than just Ransom Casterfo.
I mean, honestly, like, that's all there really is for me that I wanted to just grind my teeth about. Because the rest of it is just kind of like Leia being Leia. Like, I like it, but, you know, I don't know. It's just like, yeah, it was cool.
Well, okay, Alex, tell me your personal opinion. What did you think about the plotline involving the Maxine warriors?
To be honest, I read this book so long ago that I don't even remember.
Well, I am about to refresh your memory.
I'll say right now, it felt to me a lot like the plot to start the Clone War. It felt exactly the same.
There is a lot of similarity.
People building up an ugly military force in secret.
Oh, and right.
Bear in mind, I haven't seen the Clone War since it was in theater, so my memory of that isn't great, but...
Look, I mean, the Empire's got, like, one playbook, and they just keep going back to it, and the real shame of it is that the good guys are dumb enough that it keeps working.
Right!
Then again, look at today! Look at today!
Right.
Totally, they're slightly different. So in Clone Wars, it's sort of like a random discovery that this army is being built, but it's sort of tailor-made to follow a specific group's orders, which seems to be the Jedi Council thing. So it's, even though it is part of a grander plot, the conclusion and attack of the clones is it doesn't fulfill that plot point where we realize that it's Insidious, which is not a reference. Just to be clear, I was not referring to Darth Sidious. Anyway, you get the idea. Yeah. But in this book, right, the Imaxine Warriors turn out to have been some sort of paramilitary organization. I am not sure how much they are of the, like, in terms of the actual First Order, because the First Order, we know that they're using some kind of programmed people that are trained. I don't recall if it mentions that they're clones. In this case, it seems to be just some sort of organization of, like, remnant forces that may have been Empire at some point, who are hiding on Daxam 4 and using criminal elements effectively to finance it. And some of that financing is coming from certain centrists. Lady Carice is one of the big proponents of it. And, of course, in the conclusion, they all sort of mysteriously get blown up because one of the B-Wings or Y-Wings or whatever is, like, crashed straight into all the explosives, which, sure, okay, because they kept all the explosives in one place. Yeah, it makes sense, but okay. So, of course, it wipes all of the evidence. I'm like, oh, no, and the Maxine Warriors. And it just sort of, to me, it seems like this is, I still don't buy the First Order after this book. It still doesn't make sense to me as an organization.
Yeah, well, she only busted up one planet, and there are still, I think there were five that they knew of that had bases, and this was just the big one. But so, you know, they weren't rooted out. They weren't exterminated. And Leia has kind of seeded the field. She's going to go off and start making her own little plan somewhere else. So I could kind of buy it that way. But yeah, it was a little bit of overkill on Daxam 4.
Yeah, I mean, the Imaxine Warrior, I mean, it is kind of, I guess it's sort of,
I mean, it's Star Wars fridge logic.
Yeah, I guess. It is what it is, I guess.
I mean, like, the entire concept of we're going to build an entire giant fucking space navy in secret and a giant fucking army in secret that's big enough to take over planets. You're like, okay, sounds good.
But, you know, as Douglas Adams reminded us, space is really mind-bogglingly big.
Also true.
You know, walk to the chemists, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it would be easier to build a navy in secret somewhere out in space than it would be, like, here.
That is extremely true.
Yeah, because it's just like another book I recently finished, Alistair Reynolds' Shadow Captain, and it's set in a version of our solar system that it's millions of years in the future. And all the planets have been broken up into little asteroids that are settled and built up and everything. But nobody knows how many people there are. They barely know what rock is what. It's complete chaos. And so people can get up to all kinds of fuckery. And that kind of really reminded me of, like, in space, it would be much easier to keep secrets. You know, on Earth, we can have satellites looking at North Korea and at least have an approximate idea what they're up to. But there's no way you could watch every planet and every little moon and every asteroid and every system.
Well, and in this case, right, they literally can't because the Republic is, like, neutered.
Barely competent, yeah.
They're barely competent, and we also have, to some degree, that this book reminds us that they haven't brought all of the worlds in yet. There are a lot of worlds that have sort of gone independent and really don't want to be part of this New Republic thing. And Leia seems to understand that because they have fucking good reason, right? The Empire was kind of a dick last time. So there is some of that. I guess the thing that I don't understand is there are elements of the way that this is supposed to be operating that, like, don't, they seem so incompetent that I don't know how they have managed to get this far that they actually are a legitimate threat, let alone how we get to The Force Awakens.
Sean, Donald Trump is president.
Right.
I understand why Donald Trump is president because
Competency has nothing to do with success sometimes.
Well, it does if you're going to take over an entire government, like, made up of multiple worlds and build a giant fucking laser thing that can blow shit up. Like, to some degree, someone has to be good at math.
Well, fascists are good at math, too.
I know. Sometimes they are.
One thing we are... And this is one of the things that I really admire Claudia Gray for, is when you're writing interstitial material like this, you're writing under some really artificial constraints, right? Because you've got the story that came after and you have to be consistent with it, but you also have to be consistent with the story that's coming next. And you're just writing the connective material, and that puts a lot of restraint on what you're going to be able to do. So the fact that she was able to invent this amazing Casterfo character and tease out, which I think she might have had to do a lot of teasing out how this schism worked, because I don't know that the powers that be in the mouse had necessarily thought that out.
Yeah, well, I think they were basically like, it's a Star Wars movie, so there needs to be a war. But when we last saw our heroes, they won, and there was a New Republic, so therefore that needs to have not worked out, and we need something Empire-like, and here we go. Like, I honestly have a feeling that she was just doing the best she could with kind of like...
And I think she did really well. I have acquired Leia, Princess of Alderaan, which is also Claudia Gray, and I'm looking forward to reading that sometime soon.
Yes, I've read that one, and it's a lot of fun, because, that's the book where you get to meet Holdo when she's young.
I want to see that relationship very much.
It's good.
So my hat's off to Claudia Gray for sure.
Yeah, I could see that. I agree with all points that have just been said. I'm making a thumbs up. A plus, y'all. So I guess like most everything else is sort of fairly minor. We've kind of covered the biggest things. I mean, there are some other interesting characters. We get Greer Sonal, who's from Pomarth.
I did like her a lot too, yes.
And her character is really interesting because she is effectively a pilot but has to quit because she has a blood disease that's, I guess, like kind of like altitude sickness but hyperspace sickness, basically.
Yeah.
Which makes her character very interesting. And then you have Joff Seastriker, who is a young X-Wing starfighter pilot who, you know, joins the team and is kind of delightfully, weirdly Luke-like.
He's Luke without the Force.
Yeah, he's kind of Luke without the Force, basically. He's Poe. He's our stand-in for Poe.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Not quite as sexy because he's not, you know...
Oscar Isaac? Well, who is?
He's not Oscar Isaac. But, you know, Joff does his best with what he can. So we got that character. We do have Corsella. I do appreciate that this book tries to give some sense of who Corsella is because, unfortunately, the character... It dies a sucky death. I mean, sucky in the sense that, like, it's not the way you... Well, maybe it is the way you want to go quick.
Right.
I guess that's pretty good. We do get some very interesting sort of political figures, and we do get references to... I really love the character of... what's his damn name? The guy who talked funny.
Oh, the Nikto?
Oh. The Nikto dude. Rinrevendai. And one of the cool reveals in this is that apparently Leia is a heroic figure for different reasons in certain part of the galaxy. Specifically, she is referred to as the Hutt Slayer.
Hutt Slayer!
Yeah, or as he goes, Hutt Slayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the voice seems a little bit kind of like some stuff we got into the Thrawn audiobooks. But anyway, and I really like that little sequence of sort of the realization that she's being revered not as a hero of the rebellion, but specifically as like a hero of a specific crime ridden area. That's sort of like the Hutts are bad news and we're glad you killed him. Good job. And so this little cube,
you know, the Nyctos have been looking at that hollow cube and whacking something while they watch.
I assume by that, you mean a pinata of a Hutt.
Right, that's exactly what I meant.
But not another kind of whacking that you're thinking of.
Right, that you need tissues after. No. Nothing like that. But I mean, just because if you remember, she's in her fucking slave Leia costume, killing their worst enemy. You know that is a fetish tape, dude.
Oh, I just feel dirty.
Oh, of course. You're supposed to.
Ugh. Okay. Well, in any case, yeah, so I think that kind of gets the big stuff down, and then just the big reveal, and that's kind of it. So, any final thoughts that we'd like to say about this book?
Oh, good book. Shitty couple of pages at the end, but otherwise I feel like it was pretty solid, and honestly, it's a better book than any Legends book I've ever read.
Even better than Thrawn?
Okay, no, except for that. And actually, but the thing is, you know what? The new Thrawn books, way better than the old Thrawn books, and lots gayer. So much gayer.
Ooh.
You've read them, I assume.
No, no 8-month pregnant ladies firing a blaster and swinging a lightsaber.
No, it's just Thrawn and Eli forever.
Oh my.
Well, anyway, so we should probably mention we are going to be reading another book. We will just say that we've decided to, given that it's been a while for us to come back to this, we are going to opt for a mostly standalone book back and forth for at least some time. And so we are going to jump back to the Legends universe with Paul S. Kemp's Cross Current will be our next book. And then I think we're planning to do the second book that's the sequel to that, and then we'll jump back to this universe, and we'll just keep doing this fun game. I think for Alex's sake, when we jump back to this universe, we will be doing a Thrawn book.
Oh, I mean, we don't have to, because there's plenty of, like, I mean, there's Phasma, and there's the other Claudia Gray book, and there's lots of good books. It's just, it depends on, if you want 45 minutes of me telling you all about my gay fan fiction about Thrawn and Eli, I can do that.
That is podcasting gold, baby.
I should just note that by reading a Thrawn book, I did not specify it would be written by a professional author. I was thinking specifically we were going to read a very special kind of Thrawn book that was found in a fanfiction community, because that would bring everyone joy.
Oh my goodness.
I am, of course, kidding. We probably can't do that.
Well, Alex, you've probably got a month or two to gin one up and, you know, throw up a Kindle file and
oh man,
I don't want to make Sean blush.
Oh no. Oh no. When it comes to Thrawn, I can handle anything. Even if Smegma's involved.
Oh god, no. No. Good lord.
Oh boy. Duke, I've missed you, buddy.
All right, that's enough. We're done.
That's enough. All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening. We will be back soonish, so we'll be back. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, citizens.
May the Force be with you.
Awkward ending and scene.
If you would like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/scifiandfanti. You can also follow us on Twitter at scifiandfanti, find our booktube on YouTube at the Scifi and Fanti Network, follow our reviews and everything else we do on our website at scifiandfanti.com. You can also sign up for our newsletter at scifiandfanti.com/newsletter, and you can always feel free to shoot us an email at scifiandfanti@gmail.com. The intro music for this podcast was taken from Juno by Chronox. You can find more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.